First, YouTube star Logan Paul has been facing an angry backlash, lots of criticism, after a video showing a suspected suicide victim in a Japanese forest. He pulled the video offline following the outcry and issued two apologies, but despite the controversy, Paul remains as popular as ever. Paul's audience tends to skew young, as do many YouTubers, with viewers under 16 making up the bulk of his 15 million subscriber base on YouTube. His reach has many people wondering about the pull that many of these internet stars have and whether companies like YouTube and Facebook should do more to prevent content like this reaching more people. And stories like this raise wider concerns about unmediated media and who, if anyone, is in charge and at fault when lines are crossed. Kathleen Culver is in the studio with us. She's an assistant professor and director of UW-Madison Center for Journalism Ethics. Katie, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Before we dig into this controversy we were talking just before the show, a reaction for a lot of people, this is who did what now? There's this, for people over a certain age, a very low age, there's an invisible network of celebrities out there.
And it's a vast network. I think a lot of people who are used to watching the CBS Evening News or the latest sitcom on NBC, they don't understand that for kids, you know, actually now in their 20s and 30s, this is broadcast to them, that there are internet stars that would be completely unrecognizable to me if I didn't have a 15-year-old daughter.
Mm-hmm. And people in some cases making millions of dollars doing this, branding themselves, they have sponsors. It's a big and growing business.
It's incredibly lucrative for the top level stars. And even people who don't have the kind of following that Paul has can make a decent living doing this sort of thing with, video blogging about their weight loss journey, for instance. You can have a small but very dedicated following and make some coin off of it.
And in this particular case, Logan Paul, this well-known YouTuber, millions of followers, he was in this kind of famous, it's called a suicide forest in Japan, I guess, where people go to kill themselves, to die. And he went there with a camera and then broadcast what appeared to be someone who had hung themselves.
Mm.
And so what was your reaction to that controversy and the backlash to that?
So my reaction right out of the gates, I heard about it fairly early, was absolute disgust. I think that when we're talking about a public health issue like suicide that is so misunderstood in this culture, but one that so deeply affects specifically the age range that he markets to, you know, suicide is the second leading cause of death for college age students. So we need to be really careful socially in thinking about this. And so I was disgusted. I was quite surprised that YouTube did not take it down faster and that it was actually left to him to bring it down. I think that raises some serious questions.
We'll get into those. I want to give a listen to Logan Paul's apology. He did a couple of videos after the reaction to his initial video and him taking that down. Here's part of what he said.
I want to apologize to the internet. I want to apologize to anyone who's seen the video. I want to apologize to anyone who has been affected or touched by mental illness or depression or suicide. But most importantly, I want to apologize to the victim and his family.
Talk about the apology.
I mean, I think it was a sincere apology. I did sense that he understood that he had gone wrong. I still struggle to believe that he didn't get that before he posted the video, that it would take this backlash to bring that realization. But it just goes to show you how much further we have to go in educating people about this issue.
It's easy to do this, to do stuff online, not necessarily to be a big high profile star like this, but it's not hard to take a video and post it on YouTube. Do you think that that makes a very short-circuited editorial process? You don't really think about the implications of what you just capture on your camera or your phone, for that matter. Post, boom, it's done.
Look, if 60 Minutes went and was trying to report on this forest in Japan that the Japanese government does not like to have publicized, this would have been the subject of countless internal ethics discussions, a standards editor looking at it, potentially some lawyers looking at it. But here we have one person, and he has producers who work with him, but really it's a very, very short-circuited ethical conversation. And that's what these digital technologies have brought us, a dramatic and speedy expansion of the freedom to publish without, alongside it, a really in-depth discussion about the responsibilities that come with that freedom.
Talking to Katie Culver from the UW-Madison Center for Journalism Ethics about the ethics of YouTubers and other people posting online after a controversy where one widely followed YouTube star posted a video apparently of a suicide victim in Japan and an angry backlash to that. You mentioned YouTube and what their responsibility might be, and there are other people who host different formats of online things, of course. What responsibility does a company, let's focus on YouTube, have?
Well, I think they have tremendous responsibility, though it's always been very difficult. They have very zealously protected this idea of whether it's Facebook or YouTube or Google, of themselves as platforms, not as content producers. And they actually have enshrined in law some protections that they are the tube through which these things go. They don't have responsibility for them. I think the interesting thing to me, the character of this backlash, was that there was certainly backlash against Logan Paul. But to me, especially in sort of the tech journalism sector, it was very, very much focused on YouTube and how this could have stayed up there for 24 hours. And when it became clear that human moderators within Google had seen it when the takedown requests were coming in and allowed it to stay up without even a strike against him, that was stunning to me.
It seems like we're struggling for metaphors with internet media and journalism. If we think of YouTube or Google as the newspaper, then we would think they would have some sort of editorial responsibility. If we think of them as the paper company that sells to the newspaper, we would, of course, not think they have any responsibility. Are we having trouble defining our terms here?
Well, I think we're trying too hard to take what we understood of the analog age and apply it to the digital age. And, you know, there are good reasons that legal protections apply to these kinds of carriers, to Google or to a Facebook. But that does not mean that they don't have ethical obligations. So law tells us what we can do, and that's fine, that's settled. But ethics tell us what we should do. And here, I think, you know, you see it certainly with Facebook and hoax and Russian meddling through advertising in the election, a real reckoning, a kind of sort of internal look at and external look at what our responsibilities are as platforms, because they have tremendous, tremendous power.
Do you see these platforms trying to take on this responsibility? I mean, whether we're talking about shocking videos on YouTube or Nazis and misogynists on Twitter or lots of stuff on a place like Reddit, and you mentioned the Facebook example, do you see a growth of ethical responsibility on these platforms?
I do see some growth. I think it's slow moving. I was really struck just after the election when there were some congressional hearings about what had happened. There were some executives from the Big Five who went up there, but they weren't sort of the CEO or the COO. And it really struck me when I compared it to after the Bush versus Gore election and news media calling the election too early for Gore, and there were similarly congressional hearings, but we're talking about the highest ranking executives from NBC, ABC, and CBS up there really having that day of reckoning, and you didn't see that right out of the box. Now, Facebook has really changed course. They've been much more public about their responsibilities and what they're going to do to try to change this. And by the way, these are not easy questions. It's not as if YouTube has a simple solution here. We're talking about a platform where people upload, just get this, 600,000 hours of content, new content, a day. There is no algorithm that can handle that moderation. There is no set of humans that can handle that moderation. So this is not a small problem. It's not as if YouTube is doing nothing, but they haven't, the one thing that they haven't done that I think people call for, they haven't been very transparent about what they are doing. And that makes it difficult for others to suggest potential alternatives.
Yeah, can you talk more about the idea of transparency as a part of the puzzle here?
Yeah, so YouTube has a few ways to deal with content that is problematic. One is, you know, having some sort of artificial intelligence to try to suss out what's wrong. The second is human moderation, so people who go through and view and try to sense this. And this is a case where I don't think AI had much of a chance of sensing that this was a problem. You really need a human to see this and understand it. And then they also have money, so they can divert advertising away from problematic users. They can take users off, which they do with their three strikes program. So they use all of those, But they don't tell us much. They're incredibly opaque about how they do that. You know, there was no way to tell if a human had seen and okayed the Logan Paul video. They were completely black about it.
A common theme in the early days of comment boards and online forums was the community is going to police itself. So we'll have a system where you can report or maybe block bad content, however we're going to define that. How did that work out?
Well, it certainly did not work well in this case, although the public backlash did work. Here's the thing about algorithms. They are built to deliver to you content that you will value. So that when I go and search on YouTube, that Logan Paul video is not going to come up in my feed. I'm the kind of person who would be offended by it, who would raise a red flag, who would be part of that community policing. But when algorithms take content and direct it at the kind of people who are going to value it, like people who have liked other violent content or other content related to suicide, there's not a chance that I can see it and be part of that policing community.
That raises a disturbing question. If someone out there has searched for advice on suicide prevention, could an algorithm poorly done forward them something like this, a shocking suicide-related, not prevention-related material?
Well, in part because Logan Paul said that that's what this was about, that it was about trying to wake people up to the problem of suicide, which was, I think, a bit of an edit after the fact. If this had really been serious, he wouldn't have gone out there in his, flaming green cartoon character hat. It just was all... all problematic across the board. But yes, algorithms can deliver content. If someone is going on and searching for tools to combat alcoholism, they can, if the algorithm is poorly written, get more alcohol-based content, and that can be a real problem.
We're talking to Katie Culver right now, assistant professor and director of UW-Madison Center for Journalism Ethics. She's with us to talk about the controversy surrounding a YouTube star who posted a video showing an alleged suicide victim in a Japanese forest. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you followed this particular controversy yourself? What do you think? What do you think this says about the internet? And on a wider note, what do you think about all the opportunities out there for people to publish, to post online, largely without gatekeepers, without editors? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Katie Culver is with us. She's the Burgess Chair in Journalism Ethics at UW-Madison. We're continuing our conversation about ethics on the internet following the outcry over a video by a YouTube star named Logan Paul showing a suspected suicide victim in a Japanese forest. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this particular controversy, and how about the wider issues of what social media platforms, I think YouTubes, Twitters, Facebook, you name it, what kind of responsibility do they have for the content that gets posted on their sites? Should they do more to police it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll go to your calls now. John is on the line in Madison. John, hi.
Hi. Yes, I think that's a good thing that they showed the video. I think the kids nowadays need to see more graphic stuff that would deter them. Had someone shown me a video like that when I was a kid, I may have not attempted slitting my wrist had someone showed me a non-Hollywood version. It's like I think if kids nowadays were to witness someone ODing on heroin, I think they would realize that how bad it really is if they actually saw it firsthand.
John, thanks for sharing that call and your experience. He says maybe seeing a gritty, awful thing would have a deterrent effect.
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't have a very clear picture of that, not just in the case of suicide, but the use of graphic warnings on, say, cigarette advertising, for instance. Is that actually effective? And we don't have a solid answer. In the case of suicide, and I don't want to pretend to be a public health expert on that issue. I mean, I have done some work on the ethics of covering suicide. We do have real concern about a contagion effect, about moving people toward an action that they would not otherwise take when they see certain kinds of coverage.
And that's something where, again, if a media outlet were doing it, hopefully they would talk to someone who was an expert on it to talk about, are there things in our coverage of, say, suicide that might trigger copycat behavior rather than, eh, we'll do it?
Right. We do know from research that talking about the specifics of an act can increase that effect. Playing up the drama of, you know, someone who is going to be mourned and missed, that we're better off when we talk about depression and anxiety as issues, because well over 90% of suicides are related to that long-term ingrained depression and anxiety. It is also important for any reporters or editors or producers out there, we do also know very clearly that stories about this issue should include references to a local hotline or other help that you can receive. It's a very simple thing that you can include in your coverage that makes a difference, the kind of difference that this caller talks about, that's something that may have helped him not attempt to take his own life.
Thanks for that call. We'll go next to Jacob with us in Eau Claire. Jacob, hi. Jacob, are you there? I think we have a really bad connection with Jacob. Our producer summed it up. Jacob said the video he thinks is in poor taste, but he doesn't think we can prevent people from posting things like this. As you're saying, so much gets posted. If we're going to have the platform the way we want it, can we have any kind of control over it?
And the question is whether we want the platform to be operating in this way. You know, we have had decades of a very serious dedication to free expression and lack of any kind of censorship on digital platforms. And, you know, we as users get to decide, is that the way that we want this to continue? Do we want to do this? And you saw in this case, and you've seen in plenty of others, people say, no, I don't want it to operate in that way. And this is offensive and problematic. And if it contributes to others considering these kinds of acts, we want it taken down. So do I think that we can completely cleanse a platform to be something that we want, some perfect ideal? No, because I don't think we all agree on what that ideal would be. But you should have a situation in which people can say, I reject this kind of content. I see it as harmful. I see it as irresponsible, and get it out of my platform.
We heard from John on Facebook. John writes, do something for views, apologize if there's a backlash, and repeat. YouTube won't crack down on the large personas because these people bring millions of views to the platform daily. So YouTube in part depends on the success of they're celebrities.
And John is absolutely right in that my big concern here is that we're seeing we need to continue to push the envelope. So to what extent was this Logan Paul case a message to other YouTube celebrities that, well, wow, you really got to get out there now. We've now set a boundary. You're going to get more views if you go beyond that boundary. It's just the classic case of sensationalism, competition driving us to do more and more sensational things. I don't have the answer to that. I don't have the way to solve that other than to say, every time that we respond, we are telling that platform and that producer that we reject this. Now, to me, if I were one of his 6 million people who had viewed that, or if I was one of his subscribers, I would no longer be one of those subscribers.
But presumably the people who are subscribers to him already are walking down that path with him in a way.
It could be. I mean, I think you did see some people who were actually his fans reacting badly to this and being shocked by it. And, you know, it's a message to parents. You know, I'm one. The first question to my son who's a freshman in college was, do you follow this guy? And if so, be done. That's enough.
I want to give the National Suicide Prevention Hotline, since we've raised issues of suicide, thanks to our producer for getting that for us, 800-273-8255. Again, 800-273-8255. Time for another caller, Brianne in Madison. Brianne, hi.
Hi. As a fellow YouTuber, I have to follow a lot along the lines of the community guidelines that YouTube members, YouTube creators have to follow. Unfortunately, the content that that he posted actually violates those rules of content, and it was brought to the attention of a YouTube staffer who reviewed the video and did not flag it, did not take it down. It was the Paul brother that did end up taking it down. Mm-hmm. unfortunately, with the relationship that the Paul brothers have with YouTube as kind of their golden children that bring in a lot of users, that bring in a lot of traffic to the site, they really have been given an unfair advantage in terms of the kind of content that they put on their channel. And it really puts it at a disadvantage of other users.
Brianne, thanks for the call. So the community guidelines are don't apply to everyone equally, she says.
Yeah, I think Brianne is expressing something that a number of journalists would say if they were here, which is, hey, it's all well and good that I'm following these ethics guidelines and I'm worrying about minimizing harm and being independent and trying to not be biased. But then off goes Brian Ross on ABC News, who runs something that's just patently false without checking his sources thoroughly. And now he has played into this fake news narrative. So I can be as ethical and responsible as possible, but others in the community, others in my profession, can damage the public's trust in that profession. And I think she's right. When the profit motive is strong, responsibility can suffer.
We'll leave it there for now. Katie, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. A really important topic.
Kathleen Culver is the Burgess Chair in Journalism Ethics at UW-Madison and Director of UW-Madison's Center for Journalism Ethics. She joined us to talk about the controversy surrounding a YouTube star, Logan Paul, following his video post showing a suicide victim in a Japanese forest and some of the wider issues of internet fame and internet broadcasting.